When I chased these guys and offered them a chance to come work in cutting-edge, high-energy physics again, they jumped at the chance. He eyed his son. You know, you're a smart boy, David.
I'm not a boy.
You had the kind of education I could never even have dreamed of. But there's a lot I could teach you even so, like how to handle people.
He waved a hand at the technicians.
Look at these guys. They're working for a promise, for dreams of their youth, aspiration, self-fulfillment. If you can find some way to tap into that, you can get people to work like pit ponies and for peanuts.
David followed him, frowning. They reached a guardrail, and one gray-haired technician, with a curt, somewhat awed nod at Hiram, handed them hard hats. David fitted his gingerly to his head. David leaned over the rail. He could smell machine oil, insulation, cleaning solvents. From here he could see that the detector array actually extended some distance below the ground surface. At the center of the pit was a tight knot of machinery, dark and unfamiliar. A puff of vapor like wispy steam billowed from the core of the machinery. Cryogenics, perhaps. There was a whir somewhere above. David looked up to see a beam crane in action, a long steel beam that extended over the detector array with a grabbing arm at the end. Hiram murmured,
"Most of this stuff is just detectors of one kind or another, so we can figure out what is going on, particularly when something goes wrong."
He pointed at the knot of machinery at the core of the array.
"That is the business end. A cluster of superconducting magnets.
Hence the cryogenics."
"Yes. We make our big electromagnetic fields in there. The fields we use to build our Buckyball Casimir engines."
There was pride in his voice. Justifiable, thought David.
"This was the very site where we opened up that first wormhole back in the spring. I'm getting a plaque put up, you know. One of those historic markers. Call me immodest. Now we're using this place to push the technology further, as fast and as far as we can."
David turned to Hiram.
"Why have you brought me out here?"
"Just the question I was going to ask."
The third voice, utterly unexpected, clearly startled Hiram. A figure stepped out of the shadows of the detector stack and came to stand beside Hiram. For a moment, David's heart pumped, for it might have been Hiram's twin, or his premature ghost. But at second glance, David could detect differences. The second man was considerably younger, less bulky, perhaps a little taller, and his hair was still thick and glossy black. But those icy blue eyes, so unusual given an Asian descent, were undoubtedly Hiram's.
"I know you," David said.
"From tabloid TV?"
David forced a smile.
"You're Bobby."
"And you must be David, the half-brother I didn't know I had, until I had to learn it from a journalist."
Bobby was clearly angry, but his self-control was icy. David realized he had landed in the middle of a complicated family row. Worse, it was his family. Hiram looked from one to the other of his sons. He sighed.
"David, maybe it's time I bought you that coffee."
The coffee was among the worst David had ever tasted, but the technician who served the three of them hovered at the table until David took his first sip. "This is Seattle," David reminded himself. "Here, quality coffee has been a fetish among the social classes who man installations like this for a generation." He forced a smile.
"Ah, marvelous," he said.
The tech went away, beaming. The facility's cafeteria was tucked into the corner of the counting house, the computing center where data from the various experiments run here were analyzed. The counting house itself, characteristic of Hiram's cost-conscious operations, was minimal. Just a temporary office module with a plastic tile floor, fluorescent ceiling panels, wood-effect plastic workstation partitions. It was jammed with computer terminals, soft screens, oscilloscopes, and other electronic equipment. Cables and light fiber ducts snaked everywhere, bundles of them taped to the walls and floor and ceiling. There was a complex smell of electrical equipment ozone, of stale coffee and sweat. The cafeteria itself had turned out to be a dismal shack with plastic tables and vending machines, all maintained by a battered drone robot. Hiram and his two sons sat around a table, arms folded, avoiding each other's eyes.